As the sun enters Sagittarius, let us introduce Dialumin Ra, author of Hoodoo Crossroads Conjure Sorcery. In this month's episode, Dialumin Ra joins us to describe his background as a conjure man and magi, the history and origins of hoodoo, the nature of the crossroads, conjuring the dead, and much, much more. I must apologize in advance for the quality of the audio in this episode. It turns out that the internet between Japan and Nigeria isn't all that great, and so this episode was recorded using nothing more than a phone. I have done my absolute best to improve what was recorded, but despite these issues, I hope that you enjoy listening to Dialumin and the perspectives that he brings to the study and practice of the occult. I am your host, Matt Hadfield, and I am very happy to welcome Dialumin Ra to the Hadean Press Podcast. Dialumin Ra, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be with you.
I'm really happy to have you on the show today to discuss your work, but before we jump in, could you introduce yourself and tell our audience about how you became interested and involved in magic and the occult?
All right. I am James Udun. That is my name, my public name. Then my magical name is Dialumin Ra. I am from Nigeria, Africa, precisely. I am an Ifa Babalawo, that is a priest in Ifa tradition of the Yoruba people. I am a Meg. I am also a Hoodoo Conjure Two-Headed Doctor. I'm also a priest of the Mammon Water. I've been in Africa here. I am also a magician, an occult practitioner of various traditions. I practice the old ways of my fathers more often. I have been able to write some 3 pamphlets so far and working on more to come. So I have been practicing the occult and magic in general for the past 27 years. And I have had 20 plus years, say 20, 21 years right now experience working with clients and the communities around me. And I offer various services, spells, divinations, counseling, spiritual counseling, and coaching, personal mentorship, you know, into the field that I practice, more specifically, hoodoo. And Ifa, I run a couple of occult groups and all of that. So it's just a little bit about my, you know, system. Then how I come into the occult tradition or the occult practice. I got into the occult through my uncle, who inducted me into his coven roughly a couple of years ago now. I was in my 17 years old when he inducted me into his coven. And I was taught for 3 years within the coven before I was allowed to practice what I was taught, you know, after my initiation. And thereafter, I progressed to practice other system. When I was in my high school, I joined the Rosicrucian Order, AMOC, and started to study through that mystical organization. Then thereafter, I joined, after I think about 2 or 3 years thereafter, I joined the Order of St. Michael. There is a spiritual organization called the Order of St. Michael. And then I started evolving from there. And then I started having books, you know, that I got from the Golden Dawn. And I started reading into the Golden Dawn much deeper and started to practice the Golden Dawn magic. And then my uncle, that book actually came from my uncle who came from the States. So he came back in his old age. I think it was he's about 70-something at that time. So he came back and I got some of the Golden Dawn books from him and then got interested in hoodoo because I saw some books, you know, on hoodoo from him. And then from there, I started reading and then he actually started teaching me, you know, the hoodoo thing and everything. So that was how my hoodoo also started. The hoodoo part of my practice started. Then I think after that, I got initiated into Ifa, the Yoruba tradition, and I was trained for 3 years too before I was given the title of a Babalawo and all of that. I came from a royal family, which I happen to be a king right now after my forefathers. But I was born into a Jehovah's Witness family. That is, my father was a Jehovah's Witness. He became a Jehovah's Witness through my mom, because my mom's father in the early 60s was a core Jehovah's Witness. And till then, he was a Jehovah's Witness. And so, because of the love of my mother, my dad changed into Jehovah's Witness so as to be able to marry my mom. And then from there, we were all born into that religion, or if I will use that word, into Jehovah's Witness. But as it may be, my spiritual joining was like a call. Sometimes I would just be in the house and I'll feel like I'm in a trance. And I would perceive incense burning. I would, sense the presence of candle burning and all of that. I see them in it. So I started asking questions out of curiosity, And my father, my mother, and the ones who were in Jehovah's Witness could not really answer most of the questions, of the questions like, if God is the creator of all things, then probably God is the creator of evil also. As a child, that time, I used to ask questions like that, and it was not able to be explained to me in details, to the best of my knowledge, like now. So the curiosity made me to venture to ask my uncle, who inducted me into magic, into the coven at my 17th year, and then he answered clearly and explained a lot of things that were so clear to me. I now, allowed myself to be inducted. Then at 20 years, whereby I become an adult, my parents have no bound that much of me, more control over me. So that was when I was allowed to practice, because I was aged enough to practice. So that was how I came into the occult and everything.
So today we are here to discuss your pamphlet, Hoodoo Crossroads Conjure Sorcery, from Hadean Press's Guides to the Underworld series. Could you describe what hoodoo is to our audience, especially for those who perhaps may not understand the differences between the various African diaspora religions?
All right. Look, hoodoo is one of my best and most loved and favorite system of practice. I try to amalgamate almost everything I do in other traditions into hoodoo. Even my Golden Dawn rituals, I try to put a little bit of hoodoo influence into it and all of that. Now, what is hoodoo? I discuss this elaborately in full details in my class, Hoodoo Ceremonic Conjure Ritual Sorcery class, of course. But I'm just going to give a brief intro into what hoodoo is and what hoodoo is not. Hoodoo as also known as a conjure or root work, is a living, breathing African American amalgamated, that is, a transcultural folk magic practice developed based on the foundation of the traditional healing and spiritual modalities of Central and West African culture, with varying degrees of European, Egyptian, Nubian, the Caribbean, and the Christian Catholic system, the Jewish Kabbalistic influences and integrations all mixed into it. Now, that is what hoodoo becomes. This is one of the reasons why we have a lot of questions. Can the whites or someone who is of African nature practice hoodoo? And my answer to that question is always, yes, you can always practice hoodoo, regardless of your religion affiliation, regardless of your regional environment, your region, you can practice hoodoo. In as much as you study under an elder of the tradition and dedicate yourself to the practice of the way of the old, the ancient ways of our fathers, and respect their core beliefs and tradition, you can practice hoodoo. It's just an information. It is just like an electricity. If you have thought how to connect the electrical wires, you bring up a light in the house. If you're not taught under a proper electrician, a technician, you probably will burn the house down. So it is like that in everything. We should not be gatekeeping what is already open. All right. So that is what hoodoo is. And then for that, in hoodoo, we believe in God Almighty. Not the ideology of God per the Christian ideology, but God as a universal creature, as a universal being, to all religion and system of spirituality. We also believe in our ancestors. We also believe in the deities of the land. We also believe in the spirits of the land, the spirits of nature. That is the spirits like the spirits of the stones, the deaths, and the likes, the herbs and all of that. And our spirit guides. Our spirit guides here is what many people will call the Holy Guardian Angel, will call the higher Jinnocks, will call the Uri and the Ifa, and what have you. So that is the spirit guides, our inner spirit, our inner self. They will also believe in that, all right, in hoodoo. Hoodoo also sometimes is being confused with voodoo as a religion, but hoodoo is not a religion. It's a folk way of life, physically and spiritually, for the survival of the slaves in an unknown land which they found themselves. One of the reasons why hoodoo was bettered was because the slaves were never allowed to practice or worship in the ways of their fathers. They were forced, under threat of death, to follow the Catholic religion by their slave masters. But as wise men and women, what they did in order to practice the ways of their fathers was to incorporate by expressing their beliefs under the guise of the saints and the rituals, the deities and rituals of the Catholic religion, which is the religion of the slave masters. And then that helps to now turn to what people are now calling hoodoo. Our forebears, in their noble wisdom, used the native plants and items available to them in an unknown land in their practice, and probably taking a little knowledge from the Native Americans too, with definitely some part of European folk magic thrown into the mix as well. This is due to the factor that they did not bring their native herbs with them. And if they do, those items were mostly taken away from them by their masters or probably lost on board. The African and Native American slaves habitually found themselves walking alongside one another, and it's believed that through this coming commingling, the white slaves learned a great deal about the medicinal and magical uses of herbs native to the Americans or to the American land. It is important also to note that a lot of these captured African slaves brought into the American South were healers. They were healers, they were surgeons, they were midwives, they were blacksmiths, they were hunters, they were shamans, they were cooks, they were priests, they were musicians, they were magicians, who came from various structured cultures and found themselves on the land of the Americans. Now, moving further, the word hoodoo was first documented in American English in the year 1875 and was listed as a noun or a transitive verb. In African American vernacular English, it is often used to describe a magic spell or potion, but it may also be used as an adjective for a practitioner. So those are just basic informations about hoodoo.
And what is the exact meaning of a root worker or a conjure man or a conjure woman?
All right. The exact meaning in short terms is a person, could be a woman, could be a man, that works with the spirit of nature. Like I explained in my intro into hoodoo, we believe in the spirits of nature, which is the plants, the stones, the deaths and the likes. So a conjure woman or a conjure root worker or conjure root, whatever you term it, conjure doctor, it is those are those who work with these spirits, who works with the plants, who works with the elements of nature, all right, and also their ancestors. That is who they are. That is the meaning of who they are. Those who conjure up the forces of nature. Because we believe in hoodoo that as above, so below, there is an interplay of power, physical and spiritual, powers interplay that gives us, that gives birth to whatever we want to manifest. And you hear a lot in what said the doctrine of signature. The doctrine of signature is more of likes attracts likes. The characteristics of a certain plant will tell a conjured doctor the nature, the use that plant can be put into action. For instance, fairy kind of herbs will be used to banish things, will be used like in hot foods and stuff like that. Then herbs that are, you know, beautiful, colorful, elegant, can be used in terms of love and also smells nice, you know. So these are the doctrines of signature that hoodoo conjure men or women put into practice. That is what makes them a conjure man or a conjure woman.
In the European grimoire tradition, we find the four kings who stand at the Axis Mundi of the crossroads. They have the nature of intermediaries, just like you mentioned, and have qualities of the terrestrial and chthonic, but also of the celestial in their connection to the stars of the zodiac. In your practice of hoodoo, what spirits reside at the crossroads and how do you engage with them? Can you explain to us why the crossroads is so important in your tradition?
All right, I will start this way. The crossroad is more like your house gate. I like to use analogy in explaining some things. Like your house gate or your door, the door, your entrance door. Your entrance door is very important to your house because one, it safeguards your lives and properties within the house. Now, without the key, that is why all crossroad spirits, I'll come to that, are always attributed with a key. They are openers. They are gatekeepers. These are forces who are like your gate man, who opens the gate for you to drive in. And when you drive in, they shut the gate. When you're going out, they open the gate and all of that. So without this gate, things are not secured. Without this gate, you will not know the importance of things and the values of things within your house. So it's just an analogy to what the question you asked. Now, moving forward, the crossroads spirits are important because they are the gatekeepers of the visible and the invisible world. They are the ones that will allow the spiritual world to link up with the physical world, or the physical world to link up with the spiritual world. So if you're doing a spell, when you conjure up the crossroads spirit, they open up the door and allow your spell, allow your energy, allow whatever you have conjured up to flow in. Also allow the energies that you're calling forth to flow forth towards you and manifest your desire. So that is the importance. That is their role. But mind you, the crossroads spirits also have a way of being coiny, being like a trickster. You know, like for instance, if you look across cultures, I will start with African culture, the Ifa traditional culture. Ifa has the crossroads spirit known as Eshu Dara, or Legbara. And then if you move a bit into other tradition, like the Christian tradition, they have Saint Peter, they have Raphael also. As I'm just mentioning a few of them, as the crossroad spirits, like Raphael, the messenger of the spirit, the messenger of God, and all of that. Peter being the master key holder, you know, into the spiritual world, and all of that, or the keeper of the keys. Now, moving a little bit into the Hindu tradition, you will still find the crossroad spirit. In every tradition that I've come across, the crossroad plays an important role because of what I've explained before. Now, if you look into the Hindu tradition, you have Ganesha as the Lord of the Cross. All right? If you go a bit into the Egyptian tradition, which is the Kemetic tradition, you will still see the likes of Tahuti or Thaut as the crossroad deity. Then if you go a little bit into the Roman tradition, into the Greek tradition, you'll find the likes of Hermes, the likes of Mercury, and all of that. So it expands, it goes on and on. Every tradition have their own crossroad deities or spirits that they link up with, that are central to that tradition. But there is something people don't understand. There's a simple misconception about these deities. For instance, let me use Mercury, for instance, or Hecate as a crossroad deity. Every crossroad is not owned by Hecate or any of these deities or spirits I've mentioned. They are like the central deity or energy that you conjure at the crossroad that owns the crossroad. But every crossroad have their own personal deity. So in a community, you might have 20 crossroads, for instance. In every of these 20 crossroads, there are 20 washers, 20 crossroad washers. I call them washers, keepers of the crossroad. There are 20 different ones. At every crossroad, you have different deity that controls that crossroad. Now, the deity is loyal per religion, per your tradition. Is loyal to the central deity. So, for instance, if you are a Christian, all right, and you are conjuring up Raphael as a central deity of the crossroads, the deity of that specific crossroad, unknown, his name unknown to you, is submissive. He's under the legion. He's under the hierarchy of Raphael. So Raphael controls it. If you're doing in Ifa tradition, you're going with Eshu or Legba or Papa Legba. The deity of that very crossroad is under Legba. This is what people don't really understand. So when you go to a crossroad, it is important that you first of all speak to the deity or the spirit of that very crossroad. If you change it to another crossroad, address the spirit of that crossroad. You might not know the name, but with time, if you work closely with it, you will know it.
I love that. That's really fascinating. Yeah, that's really cool. Like every individual crossroads in your town or your village or your city has its own unique set of spirits. Yeah, interesting. I love that. Thank you for sharing. That's really cool.
You're welcome.
So in your pamphlet, you mentioned that you don't believe in the biblical devil as described by Christianity, but in the black man at the crossroads, the lord of the underworld, and that this is a helpful spirit.
All right. Like I said before, we have various crossroad deities, energies, and entities at every crossroad and a universal crossroad deity. They play a greater role. Without them, like I would say directly in Ifa, without Eshu, no sacrifice, no Ebo, as we call him, no sacrifice can be accepted or conducted. Because we sometimes look low, like I used an analogy before, the get and the get man. Without the get man, there is no way you can drive into your home. It's your house, but he can decide to lock you out. So that is how significant the crossroad deities are. They are the ones that will open the portals into the unseen world. So you must consult them. You must speak with them before they would agree to open the door to the invisible realm. All right. The devil at the crossroad, as Christians, you know, always make us to feel, you know, like we injected into the European, from the European system, injected into hoodoo precisely, and in African culture, where people are buying into that ideology. In hoodoo and most African culture, we don't believe in, like, the devil. But we believe in what will the term that could be used, like the black man of the crossroad, the lord of the crossroad. So why the Christians kind of call it the devil? It is because of the characteristics. Now, we are tricksters. We may allow you to go and feel like, oh, since we're going there, no problem, go ahead. And then you get there. When you're coming back, you come back with nothing. All right, so they are tricksters. They can trick you to do those things, and then you feel like you're doing the right thing, but you fucked up. Sorry for the F word. So now, because of their tricky nature of things, they call them the devil. Because the Christians believe in their, according to their Bible, that the devil comes to deceive and whatever, whatever, whatever they, they say. So they kind of use these tricksters to call the devil. But it is not the devil, because the tricksters are important in our lives, in every of our lives. If you are not being tricked into things, you will not see the brighter things that you're supposed to see. You will not realize your mistakes. You will not learn properly. Sometimes we are supposed to make mistakes so that we can learn. And sometimes we learn the hard ways. Even God, the God of the Bible, more precisely, sometimes allow his devotees to make mistakes. Purpose just allow you to make mistakes without advising you. Now, after that, you'll come back again and he will now advise you and guide you. And then if you're really ready to learn, you would walk in the right path and get the success you're looking for. So this is the ideology the Christians, injected into hoodoo, that the crossroad deity or the crossroad lord is the devil, but he's not the devil.
Yeah, it's very similar in a way to some of the spirits that we find in the grimoire tradition, such as the intermediaries, Skirlin from the Grimorum Verum, or Tanta Valerion from the Book of the Offices of Spirits. They act as intermediary spirits, not necessarily at the crossroads in these grimoires per se, but they are, as you said just before, they act as the gatemen, which open the way and connect you to the larger ecology of spirits which exist in and around your environment, or within the catalogue of the grimoire itself. So, do grimoires play any specific role in hoodoo?
Yes, they do. They play a great role in hoodoo, the hoodoo of this day, all right? Because the way hoodoo was that was practiced in the old days, in the days where when hoodoo was better, is not exactly how hoodoo is being practiced right now, all right? There's a system, like I said before, there's a system that gave birth to hoodoo. That system was not called hoodoo. That system was not called hoodoo. There was no name actually given to it. But as time goes by, as people begin to mix match things, bringing different religion, bringing different ideas, which also falls back to the original idea of the founders, it is now being, joined together and called what is now called hoodoo. Now, moving back to your question, to answer it properly. The Grimoire tradition also plays a great a role. Like you can see in hoodoo right now, people work with the pentacles of Solomon, the seals of the demons, the Goetia demons, and all of that. People work with various other seals from various Grimoires, and even use the conjurations from such Grimoires in their practice. So it plays a role in hoodoo. Practice in Hoodoo Conjure, which will personally, I would say it's part of my working over like about 12 years now or so. I think more than 12 years, like almost 17 years, I've been using the pentacles, in my practice. I have a system whereby I can incorporate three, four pentacles together and lock them into one spell, or just use one single pentacle, or just two, And I teach that in my Hoodoo Solomonic Conjuratory sorcery class.
In your work, then, what is the importance of the graveyard?
All right. The graveyard plays an important role, more especially in African culture, in African tradition. All right. The reason why it plays a high level of importance is that we believe in the ancestors. We believe in the spirits of the dead, our beloved ones. We believe that there is life after death. We believe that there is the spirits of the dead can hear us, can work in for us. So the graveyard is more like going to the spirits, going to those who understand the nature of humanity, all right? Going to those who understand what it takes, to be human, what it takes to understand what is happening to us, all right? So that is the room, the graveyard place was, is like a place whereby we meet a different world entirely. So it plays a high level of importance because we see the dead as deities, as entities. It might surprise you to know that we use, in most of the African, I think this is not really a big secret, but a little bit of a secret though. Most of the African culture, I think my spirit is saying I shouldn't say this, so I would so I don't break a law. I don't
Okay,
break a law here.
that's
Because
fine.
I'm trying to go deep into the graveyard sorcery and all of that. I
Secrets,
don't want to go that direction.
secrets are good.
But it plays a lot of important role because we see them as those who have lived before us, those who understand our plights, who understand what we are passing through and what we really want. So conjuring them, working with them, manifest our desires, and they are more closer to us. They are the entities that are more closer to us. That's why we work more with them.
Excellent, excellent. And do you have any practical advice for how people can approach ancestor veneration and ancestor work within their own home?
All right, beautiful, beautiful question. Ancestral veneration is highly important in every culture that I have come across, in every spiritual circle that I have come across. So I would just say that the ancestors, if you look into the Christian tradition, for instance, you'll see the saints, the veneration of the saints. They are ancestors, they are living beings who actually. And they then die and then be venerated and all of that. That is ancestors, all right? So I'll just hold on to that. If you dig into the Bible, you will see the importance of ancestor veneration. But because of time, I won't want to dive that too deep into that. Now, the ancestors to work with, I would say you can start with a single 2 glass of water. I'll tell you why 2 glass of water. We in ancestor veneration, we hold to high esteem the both mother and father, the maternal and the paternal links or ancestors, if I will use that word correctly. Now, the glass of water one is for the ancestors of the paternal, another one is for the maternal. All right, that is why it is two. Then you have two white candles. Also representing the energies of the paternal and the energies of the maternal ancestors. Everything, most especially, like personally, everything on my altar, the offering, the food plates, and everything goes in two. So one is for my maternal and then one is for my paternal ancestors. Now, what do you need to set up this altar? Although in my class, we do Solomonic conjurate work, I elaborately gave full details of how to do this. And even in my pamphlet, Hoodoo Graveyard Sorcery, I gave us a very straightforward way of working with the ancestors. Now, but I'll just, for the sake of this podcast, I would talk a little bit about it. You will need a table. You'll place this table towards the west or the northwest of your home. The reason is because in one of my posts on my Facebook handle, I talked elaborately on the why the West is the direction of the dead, so you can check that out on that. The West is the portal of the land of the dead, the direction or the portal of the dead, where they come through or they go through. It is just like the movement of the sun. The sun starts in the east and dies in the west, or permanently at the northwest. The sun dies completely, so the west is the land, the point or the direction of the dead, if I would just in summary put that up. Now you place the altar in the west or in the northwest of your home. In Ifa, we actually use a corner, the triangular corner of the house, that is a triangular corner pointing at the northwest. You don't place a gungu on a plain surface. You place their altar or their shrine at the corner, the triangular corner of the house. Now, You can put your table there or at the west directly. Now you cover it with a white cloth. You have your two candles, you have your pictures of your ancestors. Probably most especially those you want to venerate. All right? Because there are those who you might not have good tidings with them, you know, while they were alive. So you might not want to actually bring them into the fold, all right, consciously. Although unconsciously, they are still in the fold because the link is still there, whether you like it or not. But you don't want to consciously bring them into the fold. Now, you can pray for them, but not bringing them on the altar, all right? Now, it's just like you have an uncle which is not good with you. You might not want to go to his house. You might not want him to come to your house. But if you see him on the street, you probably will tell him, "Hey, uncle, good morning." And then you move your way. You know, so that is what I'm, that is the ideology I'm bringing up. So you cover your cloth, your altar, the table with a white cloth, pull up your images of your ancestors. You have your two glass of water, two altar candles, and then you place a fresh flowers, you know, flowers that are actually probably connected with the dead is more better on the altar. It might also be artificial flower. And then you have your incense burner, just one incense burner, not two, you know, at the center of the altar. And we have other things that are related to your ancestors. So if your ancestors are, you know, highly Christians, you can have your Bible on the altar. If they are highly, maybe the Jewish practitioners, you can have your Torah on the altar. If they are of the Hindu path, you can have your Bhagavad Gita on the altar. If they are of the Islam, you can have the Quran and so on and so forth on the altar. The holy books of your ancestors, that is the part they play much, will should also be on the altar. Then if they are like traditionalist, like African traditional religion, you know, now the question is, what is the holy book? We literally don't have any written holy books because our forefathers literally did not document their ways. They are mostly secrets, you know, and words to word, mouth to, you know, mouth to mouth or something like that. Verbal
Oral
communication.
tradition, yeah.
So, yeah. So you will, in that case, you will need something that represents them or represents their culture, that is significant to their culture. For instance, I would put it in Nigeria here. There's a culture of the Igbo. Igbo is, I think Igbo is spelled IGBO, Igbo. The Igbo culture has what is called the Ofo. Ofo is spelled Ofor. I think so. Yeah, Ofo. Now, the Ofo is like, it's like your magical wand, you know, that carries the energies of the ancestral force. And when they speak with it and stretch it up, and they will send a message. And then when they hit it on the ground four times, it kind of anchor the energies of or what they have said or what they want to manifest to the earth plane and make it to manifest, you know. So you can have something like that on your altar, you know, to represent the ideologies of your ancestors, all right? You know, or in terms of their religion, you know. So now when you have all of this set up, you would purify the altar. Very important. In every magical operation, there's always purification, you know. So you will purify the altar with your holy water. You can make it based on your tradition, you know, and purify your altar. And then say words of prayer that you are dedicating this altar to your ancestors, and may they always dwell here and be with you in times of need and what have you. All right. So that simple prayer has already configured that altar to be an ancestral altar, you know. And then thereafter, you can start lighting up the candle, sit down at your altar at that point in time, light up the candle, ignite the incense, place the offerings on the altar. You can leave the offerings this time around, you know, the first offering. You just light the, after, you know, saying those few prayers to dedicate the altar, you light the candle right now and say a few words to the addressing that the light of the candle represents their presence with you, their illumination with you, and all of that. May it guide your paths towards each other and all of that. You know, and then you light your incense and say the words like, "May incense carry your prayer unto them," and all of that. then you sit down and meditate on the characteristics of your ancestors, on the legacies they have made, and what have you, all right? So paying much time into this will help you to connect with your ancestors automatically, all right? So when you spend 10, maybe 5, 10, 15 minutes in this meditation, thinking about your father, your grandfather, your grandmom, and what have you, all right? And then, boom, you can then open your eyes and then begin to place the offerings. Because you have linked up with them now, they have linked up with you. You can then begin to present the offering. Say, my beloved ancestors, mother side, father side, I offer you this glass of water. You know, may it refreshes you and all of that. You know, you begin to say things connected to water, the reason why you're offering the water. You present food and whatever you want to present as an offering to them. You start to present them on the altar. So you should keep them not on the altar at this time, off the altar. So when you're presenting, you carry each one, you place on the altar and you address that very offering. You take another one, you place on the altar, and you address it until you're done. At this point in time, again, you sit down and meditate. Reflect on the characters of your ancestors that you want to possess. Those qualities you want to actually possess, those qualities that you want to actually, you know, become. And then see yourself gradually becoming this. See yourself accepting these advices, seeing yourself accepting these ideologies and, you know, and whatnot of your ancestors. At the end of the day, you now open your eyes and begin to share in the meal, all right, that you presented, a glass of water, you sip the glass of wine, the glass of rum, the tobacco, you smoke a little bit, the honey, you taste a bit, the candies and what have you, you know. You begin to taste it, the incense, you kind of wave it towards yourself a little bit and, you know, drawing the smoke into yourself, you know, as part of participating in the offering. And then the candle, you cup your hand around the flame, feel the energies, the vibrations and the heat coming from the flame, you know, into your body. So you're partaking of the offering at all levels, you know, because in Africa, we believe in one thing, that you don't give what you don't take. Do not give the space what you don't take. So doing all of this, partaking in all of this, entails ensure that these things are safe for their consumption. That is why also you are consuming them. All right. So after that consumption, you can say a few words of thanks to your ancestors and then move on. That's it. You allow that ritual to be done that way. So these are just simple ways. There are elaborate ways to do this. Now, to wrap this up, when any items on the altar, because I have this question asked me more often, what do you do with the offerings thereafter? In terms of the food, when the food begins to go bad, maybe the next day or so, but probably within 24 hours, when the food begins to go bad, you remove those ones that are going bad, you know, and then dispose it. You can dispose it at the base of the tree in your around your home, or just bury it, but don't throw it into the trash. Don't flush it down the drain, all right? Just bury it or give it to animal to consume, you know. Let it be with nature, all right? Uh-huh. Then in terms of the water, if the water goes bad, you can literally change the water. Now, what you do, this is one of my lovely practices. I might not remember everything now because I'm not in a ritual vibration or something, you know. So, but when you think of the water, this is applicable to every of my authors, because all of my authors are always a glass of water for the angels, for the demons, or what have you, for my ancestors, for the land spirit, and all of that. Now, so I take the glass of water, go to the front of my door, like my entrance door. It could be my backyard, depending on the privacy I want, you know. So I will hold the water with my right hand, which is my power hand, and say words like this. O spirits of water, who dwells in me, I call thee forth, for I am water. In me you manifest, and in you I manifest. As water knows no enemy, may I know no enemy. As water quarrels with no one, may I quarrel with no one. As everyone thirsts for water to quench their thirst, Everyone that I come across or that comes across me thirst for me, for my goods and services, to quench their thirst. As nothing can stop the movement of water, may nothing stop the movement, like now, whatever I want, the movement of good health, the movement of wealth, in my life. As water moves through even the narrowest place, in critical conditions, in critical situations, may I move through the narrow path, and so on and so on. So I keep saying these words as they come freely for me, constant, until wherever I end. Now, each part of the world, I will say, for I am water. So if I said, as water has knows no enemy, may I know no enemy, for I am water. As nothing can block the movements of water, may nothing block the movement of good health, wealth, prosperity, love towards me, for I am water. So at every end of the phrase, you end it with, I am water, for I am water. Now, let's talk about the spiritual science in this practice. In our body contains 75% water. If you even count the blood aspect of it and everything, the lipid part of ourselves all together, it's more than 75. So because to me, I tag the liquid, the blood is also water. The white blood cells and everything is still water, So if you count that and advance that to even the original water, they are more than 75. So I would say 80% of humanity is formed of water. This goes to my class on mammy water, working with African mammy water. In the first class, I talked elaborately on the spiritual energies and the spiritual folklore of water. All right. And I say that you cannot survive. One of the things I said there is that you cannot survive without water. No humans can survive without water for the next 48 hours. No plant can actually sprout out or sprout up without moisture, without liquid of any form. There is no way. I've never seen that. Maybe there is one, I don't know. And then you cannot also be comfortable if you don't take your bath. This goes a bit deeper into what I used to tell a lot of my students, that the first initiation, the first and last initiation you take as a human on this earth plane is water initiation. When a child is born, actually there must be a process of water, like when the doctor says the water tank breaks for the free flow of the child to come out. That is water. But that is not what I'm saying in terms of initiation. That is to show the importance of water in childbirth. Now, but that is not what I'm saying in terms of. What I'm saying in terms of initiation here is when a child is born, the first element applied on that child is water. They will clean the body of the child with water. That is the initiation. Now, when a man dies, the very last element introduced to that humanity is water. They would have to give you a bath before burial of any form. You're given birth. So that is also the last initiation or the last element introduced onto you before you go out of this world through funeral. So you can see the importance of water. So we are all water in various dimensions. So speaking with water in that aspect and affirming that the reason why you're saying all of these things is because you are water. And from the beginning of the invocation or the incantation, as you might call it, it says that in water you manifest, and water also manifests in you. So you can see the link. So.
That's beautiful. Thank you so much for sharing that with us. That's really interesting. And I'm particularly taken by the words that you use when you dispose of the water. That's really inspirational. Thank you for sharing that. Do you have any specific book recommendations that you have for our audience who are interested in learning more about hoodoo?
For beginners who are not really into hoodoo, I would recommend a class rather than a book. I recommend my class. I'm not trying to sell myself. It's the least thing I usually do. But when it comes to topics like this, I think the best recommendation would be someone getting my hoodoo Solomonic conjure ritual sorcery course, because it details basically almost all the things you need to know about hoodoo as a beginner. It guides you through the patterns of working with the herbs and the nature spirit, the saints, the deities, your rituals, and all of that. It takes you through even how to create your own spirits. It talks about the body bags and everything, the effigies and all of that. You know, that there are more that you will get in one class, and a class that is straight to the point, not hitting around the bush. So it saves you time and money, because if I tell you I want to recommend a book, I'm just being sincere. Yeah, I'm an author. I would have loved to recommend it. You know, but the reason why I'm recommending this class as against the book is that it covers a whole lot of things that you will have in 10 books, in 20 books. So if you amount the money and time you use in reading the books, trying to join all the knots, you know, together and all of that, you would spend that little time and that little money in the class.
Excellent. Well, we will include a link to your classes and your materials in the description at the end of the video. So are you working on anything at the moment that you'd like to share with the audience? Is there anything that you're currently obsessed with?
I'm always obsessed with a lot of things. I'm working on a class. It's a class that I have not really seen people teaching on. And protection is one of the key things to every practitioner. Protection against yourself. Protection against the forces you're working with. Protection against people out there who don't like you. So it is a class that people have not really centered around. I've not really seen one. So I'm working on that class. It's going to cover a lot of areas of protection, from the magical aspects, from the folk practice aspect, from the mystical aspect. All of these will be covered in that class. So it's a great class. And I will tell you one single thing in that class that you would love, most especially Solomonic practitioners and all of that, or practitioners who actually want to practice the Solomonic rites but do not have the time for or the space for the magical circle. I developed a system over the years that I've used, because when I started, you know, studying the Grimoire and trying to do Solomonic magic, I did not have enough space. I have just my small space in the room, and literally there was no space for 9-foot circle and all of that. So I now developed the hoodoo circle, what I call the hoodoo Solomonic circle. Now, what is the system? I take a white cloth and then fix herbs into it and turn the circle into a cordelia that you tie around your waist. So it's well explained in the class, of course. So we don't really have that much time here. So you tie it around. It's literally like you're standing in the circle, but it's around your waist. So that is one of the lovely thing about that class, and more of that kind of a thing is addressed in that class. I also have a class on coming up with, I'm working that with one of my friend, Dr. Cosmic. We're working on spirit containers, how you can create spirits, you know, and all of that within your home. And then I also have my book, not a pamphlet this time around, my book coming up, but it's taking almost forever. People have been expecting that, but hopefully between now, before this time next year, it should be out. The book is centered around all my practice. Like, it's my personal kind of grimoire, you know, centered around my practice. You know, all of these things I have said and many more will be fixed into this book. So those are things that I'm really obsessed on working on right now.
Right. Well, I'm really excited to get my hands on that and read more about that. Your own personal grimoire. That sounds really, really fascinating. So thank you so much for coming onto the show today. It's been an absolute pleasure.
It's my pleasure to always to be with you. And I look forward to be with you more and more than this. Thank you so much.
That was D'Illumin Ra, author of Hoodoo Crossroads Conjure Sorcery, Hoodoo Mojo Bags and Baby Dolls, and Hoodoo Graveyard Sorcery, all of which are available now from Hadean Press's Guides to the Underworld series. There are links to all of D'Illumin's works and his online courses in the description below. D'Illumin describes his hoodoo as an amalgamation of all the systems that he knows, from the grimoires to the Golden Dawn, as well as a mixture of Egyptian, Nubian, Caribbean, Christian, and Jewish traditions. He describes hoodoo not as a religion, but as a folk practice and as a way of life. From what I learned with Dialumin, I think it's fair to say that hoodoo is a real magpie of the occult world, adopting and integrating techniques of potency into an evolving system founded on the veneration of our ancestors and of the spirits of the land. As Dialumin puts it, it is a practice open to all who wish to engage with it, a truly multicultural practice open to anyone. I was really interested in Dialumin's description of the crossroads and the nature of the spirits which reside there, as well as his description of the manner in which water is utilized in our practice. I'm really grateful for the knowledge that he shared with us today, and I think those of us who are studying and working with the grimoires can continue to inform our practice further by directly engaging and learning from practitioners of hoodoo. Thank you so much for listening this far. Everyone on the Hadean team is so grateful for your continued interest in our projects and in our work. All that we ask is that we appease the gods of the algorithm. So like, share, and subscribe to our podcast for more interviews with Hadean Press's Global Authorship. Anything that you can do to help us reach a wider audience is so very, very, very appreciated. Stay tuned for more to come in the future. And thank you all for your continued support, and I will see you all again in the next one.